Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Today on the show, we've got our editor, Sarah Brown, is here. You know her, you love her. Queer artist, content creator, also host of her very own hit podcast, The Queerience. Well, thank goddess Sarah Brown, our editor, is here because I need her, y'all, because the verdict of the trial of Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd, it's in. And we react our honest thoughts, our feelings, and moving forward. What does that look like? Is anything going to change? Then in Broadway news, we talk about our very own sparkling diamond, Karen Olivio's departure from Moulin Rouge in protest of the abuse of producer Scott Rudin. And then we dive into our experiences of abuse in the industry. Like, where is HR, y'all? So I have taken the bait and fallen down the rabbit hole with Netflix's documentary Seaspiracy. It's worse than we thought, y'all. And in the main corner, in honor of the National Day of Silence, and on the heels of The Bachelor's Colton Underwood coming out, I dive into the importance of the National Day of Silence, its meaning, its history, and what it means for us as queer folks and looking out for the future, and some horrifying data points when it comes to bullying and harassment and even queer youth suicide. So we do talk about suicide in this episode, y'all. We will provide resources in the show notes, but if you do find conversations like this disturbing, we ask that you take care of yourself and do what's right for you. Then Sarah shows us what reparations can look like in supporting Black-owned businesses. This is essentially her BQQVC channel, her Black Queer QVC channel. It has four places where you can shop and support Black-owned businesses and some Black queer businesses, and essentially some items that you'll need for your next 420. You've got your skincare, you've got your fashion, all kinds of great stuff. And we also dive into a deeper conversation of reparations, its need, its importance, and what it looks like. Such a great episode. So glad to have editor Sarah Brown here on the show. Let's get into it. We are in good hands today. Look at her. She's coming out from behind the scenes into in front of the scenes, Sarah Brown.
I just made that gesture just now. Anyway.
You did. It was, if you can't, because if you're not watching and you're listening, she made a, I would say a coming out of the womb gestures is what I saw.
That's what I'm doing.
So, Sarah, I was so excited to have you on the show. I'm glad you're here, one, because the emotional support I am in needing. I thought we were going to kick off the show and talk about, like, oh, look, we flew a helicopter on Mars. Isn't that fun?
No.
Isn't that, what am I thinking? No. I forgot that it was the decade to the 2020 and some serious shit was going to happen. And we literally just got the verdict of the Derek Chauvin trial with the murder of George Floyd. And was found guilty on all charges.
Yeah. I was talking to my friend saying, like, how is it that this was a murder caught on video, yes? And we were all still nervous for it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what does it say about us as a country when we're celebrating somebody? I mean, obviously, it is good news that he got convicted, but, like, we're celebrating,
like, the right thing happened, the wrong thing happened, and the right, we're like, ooh, okay, like, someone was saying it's not even that, you know, justice prevailed, accountability happened, you know, and how rare that that happens, especially when it comes to police and especially when it comes to the death of, you know, Black people in particularly. And speaking to, again, that happens because we live in a caste mm-hmm. system. When one group of people are able to get away with something, it's because there is a caste system that is upheld to uphold it. And I have felt like it's an interesting time to be Black. I mean, when is it not? But it's this feeling of, I feel shocked when I first found out, shocked, surprised, relieved, and then sad, like all in that mm-hmm. order. And sad because, like you were just saying, sad that we even have to go through, be on pins and needles waiting for this verdict to happen and holding our breaths and having hope. I had hope, but I wasn't, I had hope, but yet I wasn't holding my breath, but yet I was mm-hmm. holding my breath. I don't know metaphors. I can't think, you know, properly right now.
Yeah.
But like that, nauseously optimistic, and only because the whole world was watching, and it took the whole world and people to do all these mass protests. Mm-hmm. And for someone, that poor young like mm-hmm. woman who filmed everything, mm-hmm. thank goddess that she yeah. did, that how many people have been murdered at the hands of mm-hmm. the police, and we no accountability, mm-hmm. right? And this is just the one that we saw and had everything, and it took us being in a pandemic to stop and watch it relent like over and mm-hmm. over and have all the attention for there to be accountability in this, in
100%. And I believe her name is
Darnella. She was the 17-year-old girl who caught the Derek yeah. Chauvin murdering George Floyd, and like was just taking her cousin out for some snacks. That's what they were going to go do. Just yeah. do, okay, we're gonna get some snacks and then thing, and like, and then film this. And there is a this has been vetted by a colleague of mine. There is a GoFundMe mm-hmm. For her with the sole purpose to help promote her healing.
Oh, good.
Like 17 years old. And not to detract too much from this, but there's something else I was watching recently, and I think it was on The Daily Show, but it was parents who are having the talk with their children at like younger ages. And there was like this girl, she was like a little yeah. girl, like 6 or 7 years old. And she like says her full name, and she's like, you know, my name is Michaela Johnson. Like she did the whole entire thing of what her dad taught her to say. Right. And she goes, they're like, what did dad teach you what to do? And she goes, my name is Michaela Johnson. I am unarmed. And like, she does this whole speech. There's nothing in my pocket. I am unarmed. Like she's eight, it sounds like a little girl who's fucking saying it. And that broke me. I think I was working out, watching The Daily Show, saw that, and just started
yeah,
crying.
Because we live in a society that looks at Black children as adults and looks at them as predators or as dangerous people mm-hmm. because that's how the police and that's how society sees them. And it's so like, That's what parents are literally having to teach their children mm-hmm. right
Black
now.
Parents in Instead particular. Like, Black parents.
Black parents. Yeah, yeah Black parents. No, sorry. Yeah. Black parents have to teach their children that right now. And it's like, we have to, like, defunding is not enough. Okay. Like, abolishment. We need to rebuild mm-hmm. what right. we think of as public yeah. safety.
There it is. Put it For on a real. T-shirt. Sarah just said it plainly and simply.
yeah.
Because, again, we've talked about this podcast mm-hmm. before, but the roots are rotten. And you don't just keep trying to plant. If the soil is nasty, you don't just keep trying to, like, oh, let's mm-hmm. just cut this tree down, but it's still rotten and nasty. Like, it's you have to rebuild it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the history of the police is to police, specifically Black bodies, recapture slaves, mm-hmm. and also to uphold and protect, mm-hmm. you know, capital and buildings. Like, that's its genesis.
100%.
And then this was, I don't even know if touching is the right word. It's mm-hmm. it's sad. You know, so much of this is yeah. sad, and I feel like we less of a weight is on my shoulders or on our shoulders. We're able to slightly breathe mm-hmm. a little bit, which is also heartbreaking because George Floyd can't breathe. This shouldn't happen.
Exactly.
But there was a tweet that mm-hmm. I didn't realize this, but the family of Emmett Till, which we all know the story of that 14-year-old mm-hmm. Black boy who yeah. was lynched in Mississippi in 1955 after being accused of offending mm-hmm. a white woman in a grocery store. Well, Emmett Till's family was with the family of George Floyd to offer support as the jury came out to the decision
yep.
of the Derek Chauvin trial. And that's a lot, mm-hmm. you know? Emmett Till didn't. Yeah. Emmett Till was like murdered and lynched, you know, and there was no justice for that mob of what happened there.
Mm-mm. Oh no! And some people don't even learn about Emmett Till in schools, even still to this day. And like that's history. That's American history. And like, what it, AOC tweeted something today saying that this one verdict does not change the whole system. Yeah. And that accountability is not changing the whole system. And like, you know, black people did this. Black people made this verdict happen by leading protests and filming. And, you know, we, you know, even like, I don't want, sorry, I don't want to give any of these people like power by saying their names. But, you know, like Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, like I want to give their names,
and not
power,
like the George
course,
Zimmermans or like the,
yeah, exactly, like Breonna Taylor, like these people need justice, and George Floyd, like this is the start, this is some, this is good news, but you know we need more accountability. We need more, like even today. Micaiah Bryant, who's 15 years old, called the police because these women, I guess, were fighting outside her house and she called them for help and the police shot and killed her. 15 minutes after this verdict was out. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like, this is it, what, there needs to be a whole, like, the police was founded by the KKK. Like, that's, you know what I mean? And they... How can an organization founded by a hate group and a terrorist group, if I might add, I think at least.
Oh, yeah, I would also add, like, add my chips into that thinking pile, I'm all in.
Yeah. How can that run humanely? How can a system founded on that ever run humanely?
I think the answer is it
can't. And,
And
it can't,
It can't. And like, so what you're saying, it's like, I don't, like, I feel it's not something like there's nothing for me to celebrate today. It's again, the right thing happened. It just, for me, it's brought up everything back up. And I honestly, like, you know, I've been very numb to the trial. I wasn't really following it in depth because I just didn't have the heart space. But yeah, like, it's just like, okay, this happened and there's still more, like Dante Wright's funeral is this week. Right. And that is within the same, this is like within the same, you know, county, that this is occurring. So it's like, there's still this, you know, epidemic that is always been happening, but now everyone is still taking notice. And so I think it's the work just continues, that we don't get to take a break. It's like, great, let this be fuel for the fire. And someone else was saying, like, you know, everyone's trying to prepare for, like, you know, if the verdict was going to be not guilty, oh, we got to get the National Guard and the you know, because people might be protesting, yada, yada, yada. But also it's like, okay, are we taking accountability? Like, what is the police officer's reaction to this going to be? How are they going to respond to this when being out there in the communities? And so, yeah, like you said, we got to redo the whole entire structure. We asked them, I've been on the other end of it where we asked them to do too much, where I've been in situations and I'm like, this is a mental health situation. This, you should not be here right now, right? We've asked them to do too much. The current system just isn't working. People are dying. And this is it's a grave issue that has been for generations. So I do want to switch gears here to something that's even further into your lane. Not that this isn't, but you, to me, are like, you're a Broadway person, you work in the industry, you're an addict, you know, you're in the theater industry, and this happened and I was like, ooh, Sarah, we got to talk about this. So our very own sparkling diamond Karen Olivio, to which I saw Mulan, this is the last show I saw on Broadway, was Moulin Rouge.
It was a good
show. I went the night where she wasn't performing and I was so upset. I got, like, Karen Olivio, who is, you know, this, you know, woman of color, like, just living legend. I got, like, like Melissa from some reality TV show. Like she's like, I forgot her name. The picture. I don't know who that is. She's just whitey McWhite girl, which is like, I'm sure that's fine.
Of course.
But to me, having Karen Olivia watching her play Satine in Moulin Rouge is a different experience for me. And honestly, the rest of the audience, because it just, when you add in other races, it adds in layers, right? So,
Broken-hearted, of course.
I saw, you know, Karen, whitey I saw face. Becky. Yeah. I saw Becky Karen. Performing.
Of course her name's
Or something like, I don't know, Stacy, something just like, she had like, the, you know, she just...
Linda.
It's just even worse. Anyways, so Karen Olivia is not returning back to Moulin Rouge as the Broadway is coming back open. She's not coming back because she is just done over the silence over Scott Rudin. Can you shed some light onto the Scott Rudin situation, who he is, what it is?
Well, he's a, you know, guy. He's a white guy on Broadway, like most of them are. And like, he basically is, he's like a producer, you know, like he has a lot of money in a lot of the shows and a lot of power, and he's famous. He's been around for a while. Like he's very synonymous with theater as much as like Stephen Sondheim.
Right. And he's a gatekeeper, right? He like probably that. Is like kind of that you would equate him to, well, this isn't a good word for anybody, but a Harvey Weinstein. But in the way that Harvey Weinstein could do anything in Hollywood. Exactly. But then again, Harvey Weinstein could do anything in Hollywood. And same thing, Scott Rudin could do anything in Broadway.
This Scott Rudin situation, though, it feels like it's blowing up because it's him. When, like, on Facebook the other day, like, there were so many people, like, who they were talking about this Scott Rudin thing, saying like they've been in indie theater companies or summer stock companies where they have these situations, but the person isn't as famous or like, you know, it's not a known theater company. So people are like, why should we care? And like, it's really, and
it's systemic, you know, the abuse that is happening in this industry, because you know what? There is no HR in the acting world. We don't have an act. We don't. And the fact that you just, isn't that insane that you just laughed at it? But it's like, how there unsafe? It's like we're riding around in a rocket ship with no safety belts and just like, this is the industry. Exactly. This is what you want. Exactly. And it's like, who do we go to when there is, like, there is, how many directors that I have worked with or producers that are just like bad behavior? Like Scott Rudin was like throwing potatoes. This isn't funny, but he threw a potato at somebody.
Oh,
but he was like throwing shit at people, just being like temper tantrums. And the because it's so expected in this industry, especially when you have a certain amount of power, you know, no one gets challenged on it. And this all came up, and you know, Karen Olivia is pretty much speaking out that, you know, Broadway's not saying or doing enough. This behavior came to light and nothing has happened. And she said, I really encourage everyone to watch the video. She's like, you know, the silence about Scott Rudin, unacceptable. That's the easy one, y'all. That's a monster. That should be a no-brainer. And she's walking away from the lead on a Broadway show. It's huge. Yep. And she's even saying to like other actors, she's like, everyone's talking in the background, but people aren't coming out and standing up. And because, and I get it, people are afraid, but we got to be able to risk something. Like, and maybe it's easier for her because she is, you know, she's, I don't know her financial situations, but she has made it.
Yeah.
She has made it, you know. I've done it before. So, but she did say there has to be, integrity has to matter. And doing projects with people that are about and hold integrity. And she goes, you know, let's divest and invest in ourselves. I want to make a theater industry that matches my integrity.
It's so disheartening and disgusting that like we finally have like a woman of color who's a lead in a very famous show, Moulin Rouge, like, and especially the original movie, like Nicole Kidman is whitey ass whitey face, and we go from that to like
Karen Olivia,
a woman of color lead, and she has to step away because of a white man.
Ooh,
and like
that's true.
That is, you know, and when it comes
and because the industry itself isn't doing what it needs to do to step up, so she's like, well, let me show you what y'all should be doing. I'm going to step away from this.
Yeah. Broadway is racist, in case you didn't know. No, as an institution. We know.
Yeah. It's very... Teresa's episode a few weeks ago about just the racial demographics. So
yes. Oh, yes. Everyone should listen to Teresa's episode. Oh, God. Yes. I edited it. I would know.
You're like two thumbs up. I can corroborate.
I can attest.
Very good. Yeah.
But it's like you have all these white men in power who basically get to decide what goes up, and you know that's an issue. And when you're trying to hold these very very powerful men who are in, like who are investing millions, like literally millions of dollars, and you're going up, it's like their word against yours. You're going up against them. And it's like, we see this issue just time and time
Becky's
again.
Gonna get the part. She's the understudy.
Becky's gonna get the part.
Becky's coming up. I do think her name is actually like Melissa. And she's got like, very like, she's got bangs. Like, she has like very strong long hair. She just is like the opposite to Karen Olivia. It's just like, literally just like, I want my money back. But I am appreciative that there is a movement. I've even seen on, there's a hashtag called Broadway Fights Back, and there's demands. Like, one of the demands my friend posted says, put Scott Rudin on the AEA do not work list. So
yes, blacklist that motherfucker.
Okay, blacklist all right, Rashida Tlaib.
But like, there needs to be some accountability. There has to be at some point. Like, we've just gone through a global pandemic in which discussions of like a 40-hour work week, how people are treated at work, like how, and a lot of me and my friends were like, maybe it'll get better now. Maybe equity. Yes, I'm calling you out, Equity.
Okay, she got your number. She got your number,
like,
Equity.
Maybe Equity will hire more black stage managers. And maybe
Novel
Equity
idea.
Will hire more black designers.
Interesting.
And I truly, truly
Whoa, this is too
like,
wild. First you want
know,
to abolish the police and get rid of it. And now you want there to be like more than one black stage manager and designer?
Yes.
Sarah, this
yes,
is...
Yes, I do.
You're asking
yes,
a lot,
I do.
Okay?
But like, that's the thing. When people talk about like diversity on stage, I also want
to
talk about
it needs
about
to be behind the stage.
Off
yes.
stage.
Yes.
And it's like... You know, when you're in that room, like when you're in the room rehearsing or whatever you're doing, like when you're creating art, I believe it should be a safe space for everyone.
Right.
And that space should be a place where you can be creative and be yourself and not feel like, you know, somebody's putting you in danger. And Scott Rudin abused his power and put people in danger and made... our sacred spaces unsafe.
So I do want to touch on something that was cut for time last episode, and don't you cut it.
Ooh,
don't you
cut what did
it
I
this
cut?
Week, Sarah. We have to tell the people about Seaspiracy, Sarah. I watched the documentary.
Oh my God. Can I say something?
Have you seen the documentary, Sarah? Have you seen it?
Listen, yes. Listen, yes. Listen. All y'all corner kids, I just want to say, this is what I want to say. Unless you are fishing your own fish.
Okay. I also want to say that you were telling them, and can we just answer this one question first? Have you seen the documentary, Sarah?
But no, I haven't.
You got a lot of opinion.
I have a lot of opinions about food, and it's being ethically sourced.
Okay,
because, like,
you should still see this documentary.
Like,
you should still see it.
But like, unless you're doing it all yourself, it's all unethical.
Okay.
No matter
what. Well, actually, you know what? Here's what's funny. Sarah just saved you all 90 minutes of a well-produced YouTube like QAnon adjacent rabbit hole, because that's actually really, you'll walk away with it that Sarah's absolutely right. Similar to, we got to defund the ocean or whatever it is.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Because it isn't, like, there is no ethical forms of, so first of all, Seaspiracy, right? I want to give Kyle props because he did mention that the name of the documentary should have been called Conspiracy.
Right. What a missed opportunity.
But you know what? Anyway. It makes sense because the documentary is doing a lot. And so this name, Seaspiracy, also doing a lot, where it's doing more than it needed to, just even that title. So I will say, flag this. In the documentary, it is following, he benefits from male privilege, definitely. I would almost say white 100%. Male privilege. I don't know his ethnic identity exactly. I think he's like Australianish, but he definitely has
so
that, like,
white.
Well, no, but he could have like Aboriginal as well, like, you know, blood.
True,
but
true.
I will say he just definitely benefits from like white male privilege in the same way that there are, you know, black cops who do fucked up shit as well, but they're a part of the system, right? And so there mm-hmm. are, anyways, mm-hmm. He reeks of just white male privilege. But anyways, I will say that to a point, though, at least he's using his male privilege, whatever. He's using his male privilege for good, because he is going in there with his camera and he's being like, what's this? And then like his
what's in the ocean?
He's like, what are you guys doing over there? And then his narration is like most documentaries, like even the Michael Moore documentary, which is kind of sensational. Michael Moore is just, I think, tries to do a good job of like, here's the facts. And it seems a little, it has an opinion for sure. But this Seaspiracy, it's like you can, there's not even trying to hide that this is my opinion. It literally does feel like a well-produced YouTube rabbit hole video for 90 minutes, because he starts with just like one thing of like, oh, we're going to go investigate plastics. But then plastics led me to the dolphins. And then the dolphins led me to the tuna. And then my tuna led me to pirates. And like, it's all bad. And then like, we're raking up all, it definitely alarm bells are ringing. I think there's not as much attention.
Yeah.
I will say some things, though, are a little, the way that he sort of goes after, I would say, like Asian countries and their fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, I don't know if there's an appropriate way to go after the Yakuza, but, you know, but there is just, there's some things that are definitely like, I do kind of side eye, like for some people, this is like their, this is capitalism at work. For some people, mm-hmm. this is their only main way of making money and living. And I think this is part of the problem mm-hmm. when you're saying like with capitalism, we're not able to support people when we have an industry that is damaging. Well, then what are you then going to do? But then the other side of it too, you have big fishing or big fish, I guess is what you call it. I don't know.
big pharma
fish.
Yeah.
But what they have done for other countries, like along the, you know, African coastline, is they've taken all of the fishing. And so even like the locals, they can't even fish. There's no fish left for them. So mm-hmm. they can't even survive. And it's what has tripped up the Somali pirates, were people who used to be fishermen. And they were like, well, I can't fish. Guess I gotta steal shit. And that's where you literally, so all these different things. And the coral reefs, like the damage, like see this documentary got me going. I got my hat, oof, I got my cone on. Oof. And I'm like, Sarah, did you know?
God,
did
it's
you
the
know?
Tin foil.
It literally will fucking set you off. And all of like the fish, even if it's like, oh, like you can, oh, this is like, you know, what is it, like mm-hmm. safe? It's like ocean safe or something, or like ethically. It's all, you can't actually, the way that it's all set up, you can't actually track what is
exactly.
ethical fish and what is not. And so that's, yeah. And there's a lot of moments where he's like there's a lot of moments in the documentary where it's like, can you just hit, can you turn the camera off, please? Can you turn the camera off? He gets a lot of interviews like that where people are just like, he's got him because he swooped in there. And he's like, I'm just a white guy with white male privilege. And they're like, yeah, I'll talk to you. Even like ocean activists, he's getting everyone caught up in, because like, I guess it's like mm-hmm. a label that people are able to like buy, and only a small percentage of what we think these ocean conservation groups are doing. But they're also, you got to look at like who's also paying their bills. So it is.
It's a circle. It's a circle. But again, anyways, unless you're fishing yourself, killing your own chickens, it's not going to be ethical. Like, did you not?
Okay. So you just literally in like 30 exactly. seconds surmise everything that I just went off on my like tinfoil hat on. Sarah's like, But wait a minute, Sarah. I believe mm-hmm. that because I was like, Sarah, you watch this documentary. And I quote, okay. Don't quote me on this, but it's a misquote.
yeah,
you were like, I don't want to stop eating fish. I feel like that's what you said. What was the other thing you just said? Like, you were like, people, it's all unethical fish. And then meanwhile, you're chowing down on some halibut.
The good place. Like, are we all not going to take, like, nobody is good.
Yes.
You know what
it's
I mean?
It's so hard to be a good person. I know, but Sarah, this is a little bit more than just like, oh no, I'm drinking almond milk and it's using too much water. This is, I'm helping to destroy the ocean at a rate that we cannot. It's even worse than like the Amazon destruction, the coral, because they're like with these giant nets just dragging up the whole ocean floor just to catch a few fish, and you can't.
No, I'm ordering like, sushi right now. No. I'll see
the sushi's delicious.
Yeah.
But hey, y'all. Hey, here, I'm going to put my vegetarian hat on for a second. And if you do know, there's vegetarian seafood that takes... Sarah, fix your face. Stop it. There's vegetarian seafood where it's they've taken, like, you know, coral plants and they've, like, you know, fried it. And you wouldn't even know the difference. It's, like, beyond... No!
Listen,
the planet. You haven't seen the documentary.
Yeah.
You need to go watch that documentary and be as alarmed as I am, Sarah. And stop eating that fish.
Listen, I don't eat fish that often.
See, you can't just read the articles and be like, oh, I get it.
I do eat a very, like, vegetarian diet, but, like, once-ish.
Ish. Like a Beyonce diet. Yeah, vegetarian-ish.
Yeah, but, like, Beyond sushi, like, it tastes really good, but to me it's not, like, a 100% substitute for how good. Yeah, I guess.
We just got to get used to it. It's the sacrifices that we have to make, you know, to survive.
Let's get through this pandemic first, and then we can talk about
You know what? That's
fair.
One crisis at a time. Okay, once this pandemic is done, I'm going to be like, okay, Sarah, give me that sushi. It's time. It's time to hand that over. On that note, time to switch it up. So we're going to get to my corner. And it is National Day of Silence is here. And on the heels, what inspired this is a conversation around The Bachelor just came out. And he's gay. Storyblocks is dedicated to being the world's best royalty-free stock media subscription service with an ever-growing library of stock assets, including music, images, sound effects, boing, and more. I bet they got that. And it's just me doing that. They have affordable subscription plans and tools, and with Storyblocks Unlimited all-access plan, you can get unlimited downloads of everything in their library. And even if your subscription ends, everything you've downloaded, it's yours to keep, which is so nice. I love a subscription, but sometimes you're like, I got what I need, and let me have what's mine, and it is yours. I think it's better than a prenup. In 2020, Storyblocks launched Restock, a really dope initiative that is seeking out to increase diversity in their library, which is great because everybody needs to be doing that right now. Storyblocks is committing to having 20% of their footage with people contained Black, Indigenous, and people of color by 2022, so just next year, and with plans to expand their scope to include more underrepresented groups in the future. So you can get all kinds of different people up in your stock images, and it'll help whatever it is you are advertising or telling the story of, because follow what Fast and the Furious does. The more diverse their movies are, the more money they make. Because people want to see themselves in it. So representation matters. So go off Storyblocks. You can explore their library and subscribe today at storyblocks.com/minority. Once again, that's storyblocks.com/minority.
We are the host of My Brother, My Brother and Me, and now, nearly 10 years into our podcast, the secret can be revealed. All the clues are in place, and the world's greatest treasure hunt can now begin.
Embedded in each episode of My Brother, My Brother and Me is a micro clue that will lead you to 14 precious gemstones all around this big, beautiful blue world of ours.
So start combing through the episodes. Let's say starting at episode 101 on.
Yeah, the early episodes are pretty problematic, so there's no clues in those episodes.
No, not at all.
The better ones, the good ones, clues ahoy.
Listen to every episode repeatedly in sequence. laugh if you must, but mainly get all the great clues. My Brother, My Brother and Me, it's an advice show, kind of, but a treasure hunt, mainly. Anywhere you find podcasts or treasure maps, My Brother and Me, the hunt is on.
So the Bachelor star Colton Underwood, first of all, it's the National Day of Silence. And if you're like, I don't know what that is, don't worry. I'm going to fill you in on what this day is and why it is still important today. So the Bachelor star Colton Underwood, he came out recently in Good Morning America with Robin Roberts. And he essentially, you know, comes out. I've only seen clips of it, but it is very, it's almost hard to watch because the coming out process is such a personal experience for anybody. And he was in such a public, and everyone was like making jokes about like, oh, he's gay. But he was the Bachelor and had all these like women, you know, pining after him and whatnot. But, you know, he also has this religious background. And it's to have to come out in such like a public way is I can't ever imagine.
Oh yeah.
And he talked about, you know, thinking about taking his own life. Mm-hmm. And so with that is, and this man's like 29 years old, mm-hmm. and that's why it's important to have, we have programs like the Day of Silence. First of all, did you watch you don't watch The Bachelor?
No, I think it's degrading to women.
I think it's degrading to humans.
And humans in general.
What about The Bachelor where it's the woman and it's all these men pining after her? Is it still degrading
to women? I still think that's bad for everyone.
Everyone loses. My only thing that I now hope that they let him redo his Bachelor season
with all men.
That's, I think that would be the justice for this. Because like, I actually think it says, again, speaking of silence, your silence will speak a lot, ABC, if you don't come around to, this was your Bachelor, right? You picked him for a reason because you're like, we're going to help this guy. We believe in him. And we want to help him find love. Okay. He is gay and this is, you know, the right, you know, help him out. I will say apparently he's doing a Netflix. So some people are kind of throwing shade his way because I guess he's doing, I don't know I barely knew who this white boy was, and this other white boy I definitely don't know, but guess Ken Worthy is doing a show, a Netflix documentary with him, and it's about his like coming out experience. I will say there are someone tweeted just a picture of like Hellman's mayonnaise next to Miracle Whip. Just hanging out.
Yeah.
Because it's just.
That's what it is, though. That's what it. Like.
Mayonnaise on mayonnaise.
So, we've heard the story a million times. Yeah. Like, there's no. I'm not. Look, coming out is hard for everyone, and I will never, ever invalidate anyone's experience. And your experience is valid and all of that. But it's like you're giving, like, a white cis man who just came out this, like, big platform when, like, we're seeing black trans women get their lives taken away all the time. And listen, ABC and Disney, you want that pride flag?
You got to earn it.
In June, you need to earn
it. You better do like Olivia Pope said when she said to President Fitzgerald, you better earn me. So y'all need to earn that flag. Yes. I do also want to cite, I have not dug into this too much, but there is apparently Colton Underwood was, so when he did have the girlfriend or his bachelor or he picked the lady, whatever, he's get the dowry. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they do. But I guess he was harassing and stalking her and put like a tracker on her car and she had to take out a restraining order on him. So again, also the danger to what happens when you don't come out, perhaps this was like driving him crazy. I'm not condoning any of his behavior. So there's a lot of flack that they're like, hey, Netflix, are you sure you want to be giving this guy? Is this the coming out story we want to really be telling? Maybe there's others.
No.
And I do think that there is valid because I think like hearing his story made me realize, and this is what we're going to get into to the corner and why the National Day of Silence means something so much to me is that There's still a journey for many queer people, and I think it's important for us not to just like, okay, gay marriage passed, we're good to go.
Exactly.
And just to see this 29-year-old man still, you know, struggling with his identity mm-hmm. and having to like come out in such like a public way. So, all right. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening if you're listening to this on April 23rd, today is the National Day of Silence, which is the annual day of action to spread awareness about the effects of bullying and harassment of LGBTQ+ students in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's a where students take a long day of silence to symbolically represent the silencing of LGBTQ students. So, mm-hmm. the history of it, the Day of Silence was created by a University of Virginia student named Maria Pulitzi.
Ooh.
You can Google.
You go, Maria.
You got Google. Hi, let me Google that for you. So she felt that the LGBTQ youth were consistently silenced and ignored by parents and administrators, and that their concerns and complaints were just falling on deaf ears. No one was listening. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you know what? I want to do something. And so then Maria created the Day of Silence as a one-time movement at the time. She's like, okay, we'll do this once, held at the university's LGBTQ Pride Week. And she believed that this would be a day to promote awareness amongst those who might not have even been really paying attention to that these issues were even occurring. And they were being surrounded by silence, people who weren't able to say anything. So you essentially take a vow of silence that day. And so because many have taken their lives, right, because of the bullying mm-hmm. and harassment, and so they're not there to speak. So it's almost like, imagine all these people around you who are taking this day of silence. Imagine that they're not here, right? Or even, mm-hmm. you know, they weren't able to speak up, or we're being silent along with them because there is a lot mm-hmm. of silence that's happening. And then a year later, that happened in 1996. Then a year later, the day it went national with over 100 institutions participating. This is also really fascinating because, like, this is before Twitter and social media. Like, creating a movement, like, before mm-hmm. that is power, Maria.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of power. Well, I mean, it's interesting that it was done around then, because wasn't that when DOMA was passed too, like around 1995, I think?
Yeah,
the Defense of Marriage
we'll
Act.
We'll do a fact check on that, but yeah, it's probably like around that time. I definitely know you've got mm-hmm. like Don't Ask, Don't Tell around this time, so
yeah.
There's also mm-hmm. a lot of like anti-LGBT legislation that's happening, where it doesn't seem direct, but it is mm-hmm. it has an effect, right? So, and then in 2000, the GLSEN network, one of the largest LGBTQ education networks in the country, they adopted the Day of Silence as one of its official projects. And then in 2001, it grew to include more than 300 high schools. So it's just really growing. And then due to its success at the event, the founders of the GLSEN, their national student, their national student organizer submitted a proposal to GLSEN requesting more funding and volunteers.
GLSEN.
They were like, listen, we got to get this going. And so then they were able to, get more education out to schools about this, training on this event. And they also offered to produce a organizing manual to be sent over to 3,000 gay straight alliances. And it just has started to really, you know, blow up. And then in 2005, I think it was in combination with they started creating Ally Week around this time. So the National Day of Silence sometimes changes. Sometimes it's the second Friday of April. Sometimes this year it's the third Friday of April. It just moves around. So check your calendar every year. It moves around. So, but by 2006, that number rose to more than mm-hmm. 4,000 schools. So I think approximately,
yeah. Yes.
I mean, this is 2006. They had over like 450,000 individual students participating. So it's just been, you know, blowing up. And so students at all levels participate in the day. And again, they take a day-long mm-hmm. vow of silence. Sometimes students will wear cards or wear a placard explaining their reason for being silent. I remember students doing this in high school. I just definitely was not even there yet to even – I think like a handful of students back when I was in school in the early 2000s participated in this. And in some ways, it kind of made them not a target, but a not, I don't think that anyone was targeted for it, but it did make them sort of stand out of like, oh, you know, they're doing it. I guess they must be a gay, right? Many participants will wear tape over their mouths or X's on their hands to further call attention to the movement. And then at the end of the day, the silence is usually broken by some sort of a rally or speaking event at the end where all the participants will end their vow together and, you know, break their silence at some sort of, you know, protest or movement or something at the end. Some school districts oppose the day. They consider it to be disruptive, but most do support it. You know, and today there are over 110,000 institutions registered as participants. So 10,000 schools who are registered to participate. All 50 states are represented in this number. So there is really, you know, reassuring. Also Singapore, New Zealand. So it definitely continues to be a growing movement and still very necessary. And you know, why is there a need for the day of silence? Well, hello, look outside your window. But in case you are not aware, I have in 2000 Glisson found that in 2013 that 4 out of 5 LGBT students reported verbal, sexual, or physical harassment at school, and a third reported missing at least one day of school in the past month out of fear of their personal safety. Recently, I think in 2019, the Trevor Project did the largest data pool of its kind. And out of 40,000 LGBTQ people between the ages of 13 and 24, found that 68% of the respondents reported symptoms of generalized anxiety disorder, 55% reported symptoms of major depressive disorder, and 48% reported engaging in self-harm. In addition to 40% say they have seriously considered attempting suicide in the past year. And 15% of respondents attempted suicide in the past year. While 1 in 6 high school kids contemplated suicide over the past year, according to the Trevor Project, LGBTQ folks were 5 times more likely than their straight counterparts to have attempted.
We need to do so much better right now.
Yeah.
To our kids. Like, these are kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These are kids.
These are kids, absolutely. And who grow up and then still have this trauma if they're lucky enough to survive. But we also have some of the highest rates of drug and alcohol abuse in the LGBTQ community. And that's across the board. We've done a study of a deep dive into it on this podcast. That's all the letters.
Yeah.
Like, we all, like, we, you know, because that is healing and numbing that happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, when you and I were in high school, like, I mean, it still was all...
I didn't drink in high school.
Me
I didn't
either.
Drink in high school.
No, me either. But I'm just saying, there was still, like, bullying. There was a lot of, you know...
Oh, my God, yeah. There wasn't a Gay Straight Alliance until I left high school.
I was in the Gay Straight Alliance.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, really?
We didn't have one. And, like, the data shows that schools that have a Gay Straight Alliance... there's a decrease in the amount of bullying and harassment that happens.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Everybody. Because even the straight students will get bullied for being, you know, because there's these anti ideas about, you know, anything queer. And so unless you have that sort of safe space that says, hey, we have allyship and we are, you know, about holding space for this community.
Yeah. I mean, I remember Day of Silence back in high school, like even my freshman year in 2004, my freshman year of high school, like we're, you know, but I think my experience was a little different because like I knew a lot of people in my high school were very open and gay and out and dating people. And like, it was a very like safe, and I know this is a privilege and this is not what everybody experiences, but like, there were a lot of gay couples.
I'm glad that
exists.
Like,
yeah, I'm going to hold my boyfriend or my girlfriend's hand in the hallway. And we were all just like, yeah, like I think like the more you hear other people's experiences, the more I'm just like, wow, like my high school is a little different. We were a little like we were not ahead of our time, but like, you know, that's.
I would say you were ahead of the time, or at least on where the time should be. because at my high school, we didn't have a gay straight alliance. We were part of the Air Force base. So it was almost we had like Don't Ask, Don't Tell on our campus. And, you know, I was class president for, you know, 3-4 years. And it wasn't until I left that I met other and that I had even, you know, come out. But it wasn't even it was not even a thought to even possibly entertain the idea of being that I could be gay, was gay. That was just not even something that I was even entertaining because I did not have that space or that community to be able to even, it was not a possibility. And I wonder about if there was a gay straight alliance, what a difference, you know, that would make. And then you also look at this data, like, you know, 40% of homeless youth are LGBTQ+, and that number, we talked about this a few years ago, but has only increased after gay marriage had passed. And so there's still lots of work that needs to, you know, be done. And then, you know, the survey also talked about that youth reported facing greater rejection, violence, and discrimination. Also reported higher rates of, you know, suicide attempts. And for transgender and non-binary youth, having their identity and pronouns respected by all or most people was associated with greatly reduced risk of a suicide attempt. And so going back to all these anti-trans bills that are affecting specifically our youth, where's all the people who, like, you're being baby killers, right? Where's all those Republicans and conservatives who are like, protect the children, you know, anti-abortion, but yet when these children are alive, you don't give a fuck about them. You don't give a fuck about their safety. You don't give a fuck about if they feel safe. Like, I mean, that goes to go even across the boards with, like, you know, with gun legislation. So our children are not being shot at school. Y'all don't give a fuck about children. All. You give a fuck about yourself and your own fears and identities. Like, go to therapy. Right. Figure it out for yourself like the rest of us are.
You claim to be this party of...
Got me going.
We want the children. We need to protect our children. How about all those priests who are sexually assaulting and raping children? You care about them? These are fucking kids who, like, are coming... They're struggling with their identity, like, and, you know, they want to just play fucking sports. That's all they fucking want to do.
Yeah.
If anybody who is...
I thought you were going to say Sailor Moon, and I was like, they want to play Sailor Moon, but you're right. They want to play Sailor Moon and sports.
The fact that if any human being exists, because of your existence, you deserve safety, respect, and health care. Republicans, you know what I mean? Like,
laying it down, Sarah for president. But, like, it is, but then they are supposed to be this party of, like, you know, smaller government. And to me, that just sounds like big government and overreaching, you know? So it's like sort of like the inconsistencies. Some more, you know, data points, you know, 70.1% of LGBTQ students in this 2020 reported being verbally abused, you know, called names based on, you know, their gender expression or gender. 28.9% of LGBTQ students were physically bullied. 48% of and 24.4% because of their gender expression and 22.8% based on their gender. 48.7% of LGBTQ students experienced cyberbullying in the past year, which is, I think, with, like, if you just with, I believe I read a data point that it was just 15% of, I guess, just when the data pool is just all students and not filtering out for LGBTQ students. So that goes up. And cyberbullying is, like, I mean, I can't even imagine. You don't get to leave it, right? You're at school and it's still happening. Like, you're with the phones. It's, and you never have, like, any, like, you know, safe, you know, sanctuaries. And cyberbullying is one of the leading causes to teen suicide today. 59.5% of LGBTQ students felt unsafe at school because of their sexual orientation, 44.6% because of their gender expression. Like, all these numbers, I can go on and on. I can, you know, link it to you. But all these numbers are that, you know, abuse is happening, verbal abuse, physical abuse, and students don't feel safe. And compared to LGBTQ students with no supportive school staff, students with many, like 11 or more supportive staff at school, were less likely to miss school because they felt unsafe, right? And felt greater belonging to their school or community. There was, this one, 34.8% of LGBTQ students missed at least one entire day at school in the past month because they felt unsafe or uncomfortable. 10.5% missed four or more days in the past month because they felt unsafe or uncomfortable. That's a lot. That your only job as a kid is just you go to school, that's it. And they don't feel safe that, yeah, mm-hmm, yep, 100%. I did want to highlight, you know, like you were saying, you know, lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth, they reported being bullied at school nearly twice the rate of heterosexual peers, and attempted suicide at more than four times the rate. And I bring this to the point, the National Day of Silence is a huge impact, like, in my life. You know, when I was 18, I was at UC Santa Cruz, and it was such a... that environment that you had at high school, they were like, yeah, come out, that's great, be you. I had that at like UC Santa Cruz, where I'm my freshman year directing the closing number of Queer Fashion Show, which was like the event, directing the ending dance number. I had such a celebration of like my journey, you know. It's like, oh, I think I'm bisexual, and everyone's like, oh, we love it, like, you know, do whatever you want to do. And so all throughout college, I felt like, you know, Superman and Clark Kent. Like, college, I was Superman, which Superman is who Clark Kent really is. And when he puts on the glasses, that's when he's being, like, his not real self, his, you know, alter ego, is not who he really is. He's actually, like, just a less of who he really is. And so I felt like that when I went back home to see my family. And I was directing a show called Corpus Christi, and it is about, by Terrence McNally, it's about the retelling of Jesus, if he and his Mary band of disciples were queer, and them spreading this message of love and all this stuff. And I led a National Day of Silence while we were doing our show. We did a lot of, like, I'm huge on, like, table work and rehearsal, like, outside of the rehearsal, like, getting to know us and the world that we're in. And so I had everybody participate. We was like, let's all participate in the National Day of Silence. And I wore tape over my mouth. I led a protest march that was silent, which is unheard of at UC Santa Cruz, a silent protest. Like, we have protests all the time, but they're usually noisy, like, you know, very loud. And I led a silent protest march. And at the end of that protest march with my cast, and people joined in along the way, I hadn't heard my voice all day. And then I watched the documentary for The Bible Tells Me So, and there was a fact, and it said, as a group, at the end of the protest, I did a screening of For the Bible Tells Me So, and there was a fact that it said that, you know, gay people are seven times more likely to take their own lives. And this was after one of the people that they were talking about, it turns out that they are no longer with us. And I just bawled and just started crying. And the first time I had heard my voice all day was at this fact that someone in my community had taken their life. And I honestly thought before this that I probably was going to, you know, be an actor, but in the closet. And this is like 2007, because there were no out actors really back then. There was like Ellen and that was it. Elton John and Ellen and that was it, right? Like, that's all you had. At different times. She was a different person back then. I don't know. I had that in my mind that, like, I was never going to be out. But then I heard my voice and I was like, I'm still alive. I can't afford to be silent. And I had the, like, love and support of my cast. And I, you know, came out to my mom and my dad. I called them on the phone that weekend. That's a whole other different story and experience and journey and of its own. But I credit the National Day of Silence through going through that journey and going through that experience, and for myself, hearing my voice, it was like, I am still alive. And I think even going back to, like, you know, why with the stuff that's going on right now with, you know, Black Lives Matter or, you know, George Floyd, it is very, it's hard, but I'm still alive. And so for me, I feel that fire that I have to keep talking and keep sharing these stories. And, you know, when you look at these facts and these rates for these children, there's still so much more work to do. And I feel like so many people are complacent. And I think within the LGBTQ community and allies as well, because I think many of us are living in, you know, these blue cities and are adults now. It's not like that for everybody, right? There are people who, there's still so much more work that needs to be done. Can't just be like, oh, we have gay marriage and it's all done. That's helped. Sure. It's helped to legitimize. Like, I can't tell you how many times in, like, the last, like, month I've watched movies that take place in the 90s or 2000s, and I've heard the F word dropped, like, even, like, in the 2000s, right? And you don't, You don't hear that as much now. And I think because gay marriage got passed, we're now a little bit more legitimized, but there's still so much more work to do. And so if you're listening, make sure that your schools are participating. If you've got kids in your life, that they are participating in the Day of Silence, that they have a gender sexuality alliance. I think that's what they call it now. Instead of a GSA, yeah, which makes, that's better. I mean, keep the branding. I mean, you don't want to have to rebrand. Like, GSA's got the website. But you can make the letters mean different things. I appreciate the creativity. So make sure they got a GSA at their school. It will help save lives as well. And two, we'll put this in the show notes. If you or anyone you know has had suicidal thoughts or has suicidal thoughts, we're going to put some notes, some links into the show notes. There are resources available. I will say that my therapist, I was talking to him, and I've had suicidal thoughts before, and sometimes they're kind of fleeting, but I found this kind of comforting, is that my therapist said, you're not alone. Like, everybody has had those thoughts before. You're not alone. And there's something so comforting, and we don't really talk about it a lot. And I've had thoughts, even sometimes I'm like, oh, so much work to do. I wish a bus would just come and hit me and I just would be done, right? Like, or that subway train looks sometimes really good. Just be done with it. But like, again, these are just the thoughts that flow. I don't continue to go forward with them. It's when they become haunting. I say that just to let y'all know that, like, you're not alone. Sarah and I both have, you know, we've had thoughts, but we're still here today, and that's not the answer. You are loved. You are important. You are beautiful. You have a gift, and you're not alone. You're not alone.
Max Fun Drive 2021 is coming. It'll be May 3rd to May 14th. To get in the spirit, we asked folks like you to let us know what maximum fun and our shows mean to them.
You know, the Maximum Fun Network is really important to me because it is not just a collection of podcasts, but it is a lifestyle and a value system.
The podcasts frequently and deftly float between meaningful and irreverent, in one moment drawing attention to social issues, and in another making dick jokes about Klingons. It shouldn't work, but it does. And I have to believe it's because Max Fun's podcasts are, at their core, thoughtful and kind and human during a time that has often felt cold and isolated.
So keep being great and doing what you do.
Max Fun Drive will be May 3rd to May 14th, 2021, and you won't want to miss it. Brilliant eps, drive exclusive gifts, and maybe some surprises. Want to directly support the hosts of the show we just jumped into? Come back May 3rd for Max Fun Drive.
Sarah's corner. She's back. She's not just editing, she's saying stuff. She's dropping the line and the education. For you, y'all better learn something or go to bed.
Yeah, right. Or go to bed. Well, today, we're not going to bed. We're going to talk about some.
Wake up.
We're waking up to support some Black-owned businesses.
I'm here for it.
I'm going to talk about, let's see. These are four that are, they're online businesses. You can support them online. I'm also going to talk about some brick and mortar stores. Because obviously it's 420, so I'm going to talk about some Black-owned dispensaries.
Because today is 420 that we're recording it.
But first things first.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you can't really talk about Black-owned businesses without really bringing up redlining, which is a thing, everybody. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who don't know, redlining is a discriminatory practice that puts services, financial and otherwise, out of reach of residents of certain areas based on race or ethnicity. Notably, the policy of redlining is felt mostly by residents of minority neighborhoods or Black neighborhoods.
Okay, speak on it.
Speaking on
y'all getting
it.
The history lesson.
Yeah, I mean, redlining is always been a thing. And, you know, it's a lot more, especially right now. I mean, you and Sam in your episode, how many was it? 90 or 95% of Black-owned businesses did not get PPE loans.
Yeah, those PPE loans.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so I want us all to support small businesses. They're basically the backbone of this economy. I would love to pose a challenge to everyone listening to spend $100 a year on a small businesses, because I think that's important. And if we all do that, maybe we can help put a little bit of dent. So
a little bit of yeah, I love that. So, and I put this challenge. Shop at Amazon less. And the same way that you eat less meat, shop at Amazon less.
So the first business I'm gonna bring up is Aiel.co. That's Aiel.co. And they're a skincare brand. And let me, as you can see, I gotta keep... own some of their stuff because they're really good.
Yeah, I got to keep my skin nice and fresh.
This is a black-owned skincare, black women-owned skincare business. I highly recommend following them on Twitter because they always post and retweet discount codes. So not only are you supporting a black women-owned business, but you're also getting a little bit of money off. So,
okay, using that social media for good.
Yes, exactly. So they focus a lot on natural ingredients. So if you're not into that, this might not be the brand for you. But I really like it when skincare brands focus on that, off of less like chemicals and things. And they also do a lot of education about skincare, which is really, really important. Educate yourself on what products would work for you, maybe, or what not, or what aren't working for you. You know, that's important. So next, I want to talk about Black Queer Magic, a jewelry store. All these businesses I bought something from.
Is this a QVC commercial right now?
It is a QVC commercial. You can follow Black Queer Magic on Instagram. They make amazing jewelry. I have this opalite bracelet that I wear every single day.
Sorry, but you really do need like, you need to be on QQVC, which is like the queer QVC.
Yes.
Because you're doing so good at just like, and then this bracelet.
And then this bracelet.
If you're not watching this, she's showing me the bracelet. It's magic.
It's
amazing.
It. Black queer.
How many
magic
can I order right now?
Yes. they make some of their stuff. It can be a little pricey, but I think it's worth it considering like, oh, it's all handmade and it's all, you're supporting the queer community.
Always a good thing to
do. That's important. Now, because it's 420, I'm going to bring up this business and a little backstory to them.
Well, first of all, it's legal in both of our states. It's legal in both of our states. So this is great. I feel like there's still some like shame about admitting. I was just talking to my boss and we were just openly talking about like, you know, CBD and like marijuana and stuff like that. And it was like, yeah, but we both have this eerie like, oh, but we're working. Should we be talking about it? It's like, this shit is fucking legal.
It's
like,
legal.
Come on.
It's
in
fine.
Both of our states. So yeah.
James likes to do this thing where he creeps on people's Venmos and likes their things.
Why are you telling my business? I texted you that in private. But it's true.
It's true.
If I am friends with you, and have I done it to you yet?
Yes.
Okay. If I am friends with you on Venmo, I sometimes get bored because I don't like to be on social media, but I want to do something. So I will browse through and just look at what people are doing, and I will just sometimes
Sometimes I'll even comment.
I'll even be like, "Oh, this looked like fun. Oh, what was this?
What is this?
Was this really dolphins, or is this drugs? Is this drugs?" Yeah.
So James was asking me, Sarah, what's a pussy ashtray? And I just sent him a picture of this. I'm not going to show the whole thing because I don't want to get flagged or whatever. But this, I'm just going to show this. Basically,
I did ask.
Push. Their name is Puss in NYC. That's their Instagram. It's PUSSHINNYC. And they make ashtrays shaped like pussies. And they're
I should have known. It is what it says.
Also, if you're like me and you break everything, these are unbreakable. So when you're stoned, passing around the ashtray, it won't break. Which is important. Nobody wants to be that person. You don't want to be that person.
No. I can't. But you can be the person who likes your friend who buys a pussy ashtray.
Yeah. So.
I like this. I like what I see.
Next, I want to talk about Black-owned dispensaries. And before we get...
Because now that you've got the ashtray... So I feel like you're taking me on a journey. Before you get it, you got to get your skin looking right. Mm-hmm. Then you got to get your jewelry together. Then you got to get your ashtray. And now we got to get our weed.
Yeah.
So we're going on a journey. It's a 420 preparation journey.
Exactly. So I do want to say, you know, I believe that legalizing weed can go hand in hand with reparations and that discussion. And I would like to say to everyone who's in a legal state, when you get dispensaries up in your state, please just support Black-owned dispensaries. And that's a form of reparations, because that's what you should be doing. Most of the licenses that are given out to dispensaries are given to white people. And I'm hoping New York will take the route of giving them to Black people first, because... we put a lot of people in Rikers. We put a lot of people in Rikers.
Well, and then, like, because, like, even, like, John Boehner is now making millions and millions of dollars because he owns a dispensary. And John Boehner, when he was a congressman, voted against, like, he voted for, you know, more stringent, like, drug laws and voted against legalizing marijuana. And, yeah, like, for some people who... if you've been to jail for selling weed, you then can't get a license for doing that thing that clearly you're really good at, which is insane.
Exactly. That's insane. Exactly. So I have dispensary names for California and two in Massachusetts because...
y'all ain't got one yet.
Yeah, exactly. New York literally just a few days ago became legal, and they said it's going to take like 1 to 2 years to have dispensaries up and running.
Okay.
So in California, we have the Royal Highness Dispensary. That is Black owned. And then this one is in Oakland, so I know that's kind of close to you. Euphorium Dispensary. If you want to support them. Also in Massachusetts, Pure Oasis and Anabinoid are two really great dispensaries you can support. I think with weed becoming legal in a lot of states, like, you can go, it's easier to go to places to
be like,
more
responsible weed.
Yeah.
Because before it's just like, you don't know what that shit is.
Exactly. Like, it's
angel dust.
It's easier for people to know what they're smoking, which is safer, by the way. And also, you have people who are educated in this field who can say, hey, oh, you're having anxiety when you smoke? Try this instead, or try using it this way. Like, weed can have so many medical properties, and, you know, not so... they recently did a study where I believe 91% of Americans are like, yeah, this should be legal. You know, when... again, going back to public safety, this is a public safety issue. If weed was legalized, less arrests, less crimes.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's important.
And I think that this should be a gateway. This, you know what? Maybe they're right. Weed is a gateway.
It is a gateway.
I think this should be I think it should be a gateway into legalizing everything.
Yes.
You know what? Portugal legalized all their drugs, and they saw a decrease in violent crime. Mm-hmm. They saw a decrease in drug abuse issues, because the same thing, if you legalize it, then you're able to create it so it's more safe. A lot of the street drugs that folks are doing, it's so unsafe. And like, talk about like drugspiracy, like the things that, like, you know, people who are, you know, out there trying to like make the cutting the cocaine leaves and all this sort of stuff, like the drug trafficking thing, they're so, it's like blood diamond stuff, where it's like people who we're you're participating in that. If we could just legalize it, because people are going to do drugs, they're going to do them, so why not make it as safe and responsible as possible?
I encourage all of you to follow Queer Appalachia on Instagram. They're a queer group based in the Appalachian Mountains, and they focus a lot on harm reduction and how that helps with, you know, this whole legalization and it involved in that conversation, I highly, highly recommend everyone check them out. Because a lot of people don't, when we think about the queer community, like we only hear about New York City or San Francisco or LA. We don't mm-hmm. think about like a queer community in the South or in the Appalachian Mountains, like things like that. So I encourage everyone to follow them and also to support small businesses. Not only that, but also support Black small businesses because we need our help. And when weed becomes legal in your state, I mean, I'm not going to tell everybody where to spend their money, but I think it's important we all spend our money at Black-owned dispensaries until the government gives everybody reparations for.
I mean, this is your QVC show, so it is. You can tell them where to spend their money.
Oh yeah,
I think
exactly.
Your QQVC show is called Buy Black.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Exactly.
Welcome to Sarah Brown's Buy Black.
Exactly, and you know that it's important. And you've talked about this before, like being smart with your dollars. So I also encourage everyone, if you know. We have to take our power back as people, as a community, everybody. And I encourage you to download, if you want, if you're interested in investing money, Public is a great investment app that allows you to invest in businesses that are, it'll show you, like, here are all the Black-owned businesses. Here are businesses who are committed to having a more diverse company. Businesses that are practicing better, like green policies and things like that. So if you don't want to spend money directly on these businesses, but you really want to help make an impact, Public is a great app and you can just invest a little bit of money. And like, you know, during this pandemic, we all lost a lot of money and like, you know, maybe have something for your future. So you know, at the end
good
of the
idea. Ethical investing,
exactly,
which I really love.
Exactly.
And like vote with your dollars. So what are the companies we want to see succeed? Mm-hmm. And a part of this, you know, I think reparations, it's a mindset. Mm-hmm. I think we as a culture have to be in a cultural mindset of reparations, and it comes in many different forms. Mm-hmm. And so it is like part of like buying shopping Black is a part of reparations, mm-hmm. right? Like it's a part of like divesting back into these communities that like have been, you know, pillaged from, mm-hmm. So to speak.
Exactly.
So I'm all for it.
Yeah. So that's my corner. Everyone, please give all those businesses I just named some support. I'm sure we'll put them in the description box, and like, you know, do your own research. Like it's so important that we have to start being smart consumers mm-hmm. when we shop. And when we're buying stuff like this ashtray, I was literally just walking down the street and I saw this woman selling these, you know what I mean? You know, it's going directly to her. It's not going to a corporation. So I think, you know,
Jeff Bezos.
Exactly. So we have to just be smart about it. If people want, and you know, when people start losing money, that's when they start to care. That's when corporations start to say, well, hey, maybe we should do something different. So we all have the power to make a huge difference. And that's what we're doing. So that's fun.
Plus, you'll get a pussy ashtray, and then I'll see it on Venmo, and I'll like it. It's a win-win. It's a win-win for everybody. Okay, there's our episode. Sarah Brown, isn't she amazing and lovely? So great to have her behind the mic. We love it. So over to the fact check. So I think I had mentioned last week with Kyle that I wasn't familiar with Kid Cudi, his music. That's a lie. I know the song Day and Night, Day and Night. See, I know things. And then also that Happiness song. I didn't realize those were his bops. I be knowing. On the other side of things, just to flag this, there has been multiple, even in this past week, more killings of unarmed Black people in particular. In a New York Times article in particular, they said since testimony began on March 29th, at least 64 people have died at the hands of law enforcement nationwide, with Black and Latino people representing more than half of the deaths. And that was as of Saturday, the average was more than 3 killings a day. And that's not even including this article was published on the 17th of April. So there's even more since then. Most recently, as Sarah brought up, Micaiah Bryant, who the police body cam footage has been released. I will not be watching it. I can't. But bear witness for those of you who have the space to take that up. It's important. But Micaiah Bryant was killed just as the nation got word of Derek Chauvin's conviction for the killing of George Floyd. And that happened around 4:40 p.m. And so a woman had called 911 to report a disturbance on the southeast side of Columbus. And Nicholas Reardon, the officer, was the first officer to respond, and it didn't take him long to draw his fire, his weapon, and murder judge, jury, executioner. And I think what is also so wild is we know that police officers don't have to use this excessive force. We've seen it. Kyle Rittenhouse, Dylan Roof, all of the insurrectionists, none of them were shot or killed or murdered. And those people were trying to, one of them was literally trying to actively murder a police officer there at the insurrection and said to them, and I quote, "You're going to die tonight." And when they eventually, we went home, that person in particular went home, was eventually arrested, tried, had a court hearing, and the judge let that person just go. Now, they now have been arrested underneath federal jurisdiction. But again, this is the caste system at work. It is unsafe to be black in this country. It is still open season. It is still these are just modern day lynchings. But now police officers have free rein to do this, to murder black people. Much more work to be done. Absolutely celebrating the, it's not even a victory, but celebrating the small win of, okay, some humanity and progress and equality is taking shape, but whew, look at all the rest of that mountain there is to climb. Completely switching gears. This is the order of the fact check, y'all. I had called the actress who had replaced my beloved, our beloved Karen Olivia. I said her name was Melissa. Her name is Ashley. She was on some sort of reality TV show. Her name is Ashley Lauren, and she is no Karen Olivia. Let's just say. Sarah Brown has recommended that Patina Miller should play the new Satine. It's got to be a woman of color. That's what I'm saying. The Defense of Marriage Act was passed in 1996, or signed into law, passed by Congress, signed into law by Bill Clinton in 1996. And Don't Ask, Don't Tell was signed into law, passed by Congress, signed into law in 1994. Disgusting. Also, some GSAs, now Gender Sexuality Alliances, because Gay Straight Alliance is very limiting into the queer identity, some actually are now being called QSAs, Queer Straight Alliances, I think. I think Gender Sexuality Alliance is probably my favorite, but maybe you can rebrand it to whatever fits your school and your community. Okay, that is the show. But before we go, y'all, we're going to put a link to it on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific time. Aneke is joining. We are doing a live stream through Oasis TV. It is free to watch. We're doing a live stream of our 300th episode. So you can view us and see us 7 p.m. Pacific time. Free to join the live stream and watch. It's going to be so much fun. You can comment live, communicate to us live. It's going to be really great through Oasis TV. Free for you to watch our 300th episode. Can y'all believe it? 300 episodes. It's absolutely amazing. Aneke will be here. Watch the live stream again next Tuesday, April 27th, or this Tuesday, April 27th at 7 p.m. Pacific. Catch it. All right, that's going to do it for us. Big thank you to Sarah Brown, our editor and guest co-host for the week, and also to Sam Jackson, our social media manager. And a big thank you to all of you for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.